It's all quiet in the underground bunker. Doors closed, locks bolted. But the Great One isn't just resting on his laurels. He's making sure your weekend is even better by giving you his best. This is the best of Mark Levin.
Basically, two big topics this evening. The president, what's going on in Manhattan? And then what's going on in our streets more broadly in America? Excuse me. And I want to start with the latter. What you are seeing taking place in our universities, our colleges, even our media and in our streets is not something that is spontaneous in America. It's something that's been heavily funded. It's something that's being heavily organized by terrorist regimes around the world, by Hamas, and by dark money groups fronting, listen to this, for billionaire Democrats. I'm still amazed that people keep saying this is funded, it's very well organized, the tents all look okay, fine. I explained this on Saturday night's program on Fox. And so we're going to take some time to go over this so you know exactly what's going on. There's actually more listeners to this program on the radio than any show on Fox or cable, period. And so I want to get into this. Who's funding these violent people at our universities? And they're not all students. Let's get started. Cut 20, go.
I was in Israel last week, as you well know, and watched some of the activities that took place there as a result of the Biden administration policies of appeasement with Iran and intentionally funding Iran to the tune of over $100 billion. None of this would be happening if Donald Trump were president. Iran was broke on its back and about to be overthrown by its own people. But I keep hearing our own media, news people ask, these riots, these violent people at Columbia University or our other universities and in our streets and all the rest of it, who's funding these people? Who's funding these people? You know, it's a funny thing. I thought it was the job of the media to figure out the who and why. So I'll do it. And never again do I want to hear anybody in the media say, who's funding these people? First of all, I've done this before, but I'm going to do it tonight and I'm going to expand upon it. You want to know who's funding these people? The Democrat Party and the terrorist regimes. What? You have a fusion of Marxists. You have a fusion with Islamists. A complicated matrix and network of Democrat Party billionaires and millionaires and dark money, including Soros, including the Tides Foundation, among others. And you have Hamas funding, the Muslim Brotherhood, and others. Also a funding network, and Qatar, which is funding colleges and universities. In other words, the enemies of America. And this has had an enormous effect on our foreign policy toward Israel. Their attacks on Netanyahu, the goal to overthrow the Israeli government for the purpose of installing a puppet regime that will bend to the Democrat Party, the Democrat Party donors, Hamas, and the enemy of Israel, and it's all being done right in front of our eyes. And if we had a real media, you'd know a lot about it. So let me cobble this together from certain media reports and others and tell you what's taking place here. Unheard, a fantastic site. Here's a piece by Park McDonald from just a few months ago, and I can't read the whole thing. The division between the activist left and the party establishment is little more than a politically useful fiction. In reality, the radical cadres are bankrolled by the same nexus of progressive oligarchs and dark money, that is, dark money slush funds that finance the party establishment. The DNC protest, for example, was organized by two progressive Jewish NGOs, Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now, the same groups behind a rowdy pre-ceasefire protest at the U.S. Capitol, which more than 300 people were arrested. Both groups are funded by an array of big money progressive donors, including George Soros, the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation, and the Tides Network. These are charitable wings of major financial institutions as well. part of Vanguard, Fidelity, Morgan Stanley, another group called 1630 Fund, another big group called Arabella Advisors, an umbrella group, a Democrat Party, billionaire, millionaire group, the head of the octopus that pushes monies into these organizations. Soros, of course, is the most prominent individual Democrat donor in the country. He personally spent $170 million to get Democrats elected in 2022 midterms. His nonprofit spent at least another $140 million. Arabella Advisors is less well-known, but maybe just as influential. It's run by Clinton World insider Eric Kessler. The for-profit consultancy manages a vast and opaque empire of funds and nonprofits aligned with the Democrat Party. Its role, in essence, is to allow wealthy donors to hide their donations. And they're hiding hundreds of millions of dollars worth. Scratch a nationally prominent pro-Palestinian organization, and you're likely to find Democratic oligarch money somewhere. The radicals and the Democratic establishment work together towards shared ends, even when they're fighting. This is especially true when it comes to Israel. The Biden administration's allegedly pro-Israel stance is more rhetoric than reality, a pose adopted to box critics into a corner, constrain Israel's ability to act independently of the United States, and obscure the true nature of the White House's Middle East policy. That policy, as Edward Luttwak wrote in these pages, is to fulfill Barack Obama's ill-conceived desire to distance the United States from Israel and Saudi Arabia and to reconcile with Iran. Plus, at the same time as it is granting defense credits to Israel, the White House is also funding Iran. I want to thank our friend Charlie Kirk, who put it all together here. What are we talking about? John Kirby said the other day to Peter Ducey, "We're not doing that. What are you talking about?" This guy Kirby is the worst of the propagandists. $10 billion in November 2023, Biden regime approved a sanctions waiver that unlocks upwards of $10 billion in frozen funds of Iraqi payments for Iranian energy. $6 billion September 2023 as part of a prisoner swap. Blinken ensured Iranian funds would be moved into a restricted fund for humanitarian trade. Oh, yeah, right. $10 billion. July 2023, Blinken signed a national security waiver allowing Iraq to deposit payments for Iranian energy into non-Iraqi banks in third countries instead of into restricted accounts. $3.42 billion. August 2021, the IMF sent $3.42 billion to Iran in special drawing rights. The Biden administration had the authority to stop it, but did not. 80 plus billion since 2021. Iran's oil exports have surged, breaking records because the Biden administration has eased enforcement of sanctions, allowing an explosion in illicit purchases, mostly to communist China. 3.8 billion since 2021. Iran turned to the sale of petrochemicals to avoid a Trump-era sanction. Sales have surged thanks to Biden. 1.6 billion since 2021. The Trump administration imposed sanctions on Iran's steel industry, which the Biden administration has not enforced. As Kirk says, the Biden administration says its commitment to Israel is ironclad, but apparently so is its commitment to funding Iranian terrorism. Even on military matters, continues the piece, the U.S. has tried to split the difference between Israel and the Iranian axis of resistance. Since October 7, the latter, especially Iran and its prized proxy Hezbollah, has balanced vituperative criticism of Israel with claims that Hamas acted alone and demands that the U.S. restrain Israel from escalating beyond Gaza. The White House has complied, demanding that Israel not carry out any significant operations against Hezbollah in Lebanon, and leaking to the American press that it views Israel's relations to Hezbollah daily cross-border attacks as an attempt by Jerusalem to create a pretext for a wider war that could draw the U.S. in. The U.S. has, moreover, publicly backed the Iranian and Hezbollah claims that Hamas acted independently and without their knowledge on October 7, despite early public assessments from former U.S. intelligence officials that the sophistication and complexity of the attack was beyond what Hamas could do on its own. And it's now been proven that Hamas had the backing and training of Iran. The U.S., in other words, has effectively boxed Israel in. Having been struck hard by an Iranian proxy, Israel can attempt to eliminate that proxy on an accelerated timetable at the cost of massive international outrage and to limited strategic benefit. But it is being prevented by U.S. from taking any proactive measures to reestablish deterrence against Tehran. Even more recently, same thing. Now, read in this light, the oligarch-funded protests against Biden are somewhat less mysterious. They are, in fact, a useful form of kabuki. Biden pretends to be the best friend of Israel, that is, Israel has ever had, while the left pretends to hate him for it. Both sides benefit. For Biden, pressure from the left gives him leverage to turn around to the Israelis and say, you better listen to me, or I'll have to cave to my party's flank, while offering his party's Jewish and pro-Israel voters a show of the president's resolute commitment to the Jewish state, even as he courts Iran. And this pose is especially important in justifying the latter policy, since Americans remain overwhelmingly supportive of Israel and overwhelmingly hostile toward Iran and its terrorist proxies. The left, meanwhile, gets to demonstrate its principled independence from the Democratic establishment while setting the stage to extract concessions within the party and party-adjacent bureaucracies, set-asides for Arab, Palestinian, and Muslim staffers, a national strategy to counter Islamophobia, presumably be administered by professional anti-Islamophobia activists, and a general resetting of the Overton window for the next round of conflict. Plus, there's the continued channeling of nominally anti-system energies into a web of party-controlled nonprofits.
All right, this is where I want us to stop. A web of party-controlled nonprofits. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, ladies and gentlemen, in dark money that is being used to fund these riots, this violence. Marxists and Islamists, Hamas set up the Students for Justice in Palestine, which is on over 200 campuses, which is leading these movements on these campuses. They're all coming together, all these organizations. It's a, as I said in the program, and I'm saying now, it is a complex network and web of organizations set up purposely to confound and confuse. And I want to discuss it further when we return, but you can see the impact. You can see the impact. And Joe Biden's propaganda against Netanyahu, his propaganda against the State of Israel, his use of Hamas statistics, Blinken today issuing a report on human rights around the world, has as its number one abuser the State of Israel, not North Korea and what it's done to its people, not China and the Uyghurs and the massive murder of those individuals. And I could go on and on. No. It's Israel. Israel's at the front of the report. It's a 103-page report. I just looked at it. Israel's under constant, unrelenting attack by this administration, by the State Department, by John Kirby, under unrelenting attack by CNN and MSNBC and the Islamists that work for them, or the Islamic sympathizers that work for them. The New York Times and the Washington Post, they've created this environment of Jew hatred in this country and America hatred in this country between the Marxists and the Islamists and the Democrat Party is the umbrella organization. That's why I wrote the book, The Democrat Party Hates America. That's why I wrote the book before that, American Marxism. It's all quite prescient, to be perfectly honest with you. It's all laid out. And George Soros has a fundamental role in funding the Tides Foundation. George Soros is very close to the Blinken family. These things aren't just happening. These things are organized. They are funded. They are manned. These organizations didn't just spring up. So you have the overlay of the Hamas funding network, which is funded by the Muslim Brotherhood. They're all funded by Qatar and some of these other organizations and states. You have the domestic Marxist groups. And if you think about it, so I'll be the first one to explain this, even though I mentioned it last week. The riots that took place in 2020, it's the same people. It's the Islamists and the Marxists. It's the same people, just a different cause.
Mark Levin.
In today's digital age, where cyber threats loom larger than ever, safeguarding your personal information is paramount. So why is Congress considering a law that could put your credit card data at greater risk of being hacked and exposed to foreign networks? This Durbin-Marshall credit card bill could jeopardize your financial data, make it more susceptible to cyber intrusions. It's a controversial bill that proposes a shift in billions of dollars worth of consumer transactions to payment networks that lack the robust security measures consumers rely on. Who could possibly want that? Well, the answer, woke corporate megastores seeking to inflate their multi-billion dollar profit margins. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill will undermine our safe and convenient payment systems and endanger your data security. It's time to take a stand. Visit electronicpaymentscoalition.org. Make your voice heard. Tell your senators to oppose the radical Durbin-Marshall credit card bill, paid for by the Electronic Payments Coalition.
Making your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
You know, my wife sent me a text. I just posted them. It's really a brilliant point. Raises a lot of issues. But in this one, she points out that the Biden campaign, Blinken and Sullivan in particular, organized a letter, as you might recall, on the Hunter Biden laptop. 51 former spooks, that is what we call intel types, national security types, signed it, saying that it was a Russian dirty trick, a Russian ploy, Russian interference in our election, and they knew it was a lie, and they did it anyway. And they did it to help Biden's election, to put him in a more positive light. And so her question is, her point, isn't it amazing that that's not considered a felony for which to prosecute Blinken or Sullivan or the Biden campaign or Biden himself if he knew about it? That wasn't reported as a campaign contribution. And so the point is, look at what they're doing to poor Donald Trump. And I'm going to get into this later in the program, too. It's really so abhorrent, so damn disgusting, all of it. And this judge is a slime ball. It's what he is. It's what he is. He's a slime ball. He's going after the defense lawyer. Excuse me, cholera. Going after defense lawyer. Over issues on the gag order. I've never seen so many gag orders in my life. Ever. Boy. So the same administration. Let me put a fine point on this. The Biden administration, I told you folks this, Joe Biden is an anti-Semite. His administration is anti-Semitic. CNN and MSNBC are anti-Semitic. The New York Times is anti-Semitic. Now, it's not just Mark sitting here as a Jewish guy calling everybody anti-Semitic. Everybody's not anti-Semitic. 80% of the American people, probably a lot more, actually support Israel. And that's not the determining factor on whether you're anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic is what you see now and what you're hearing now. And every time Joe Biden is confronted with this issue of anti-Semitism, which his party is funding. Do you understand what I'm saying? His party's funding this. Which the Islamists are funding. Hamas is funding. Every time he's confronted with it, he brings up the Palestinians, Islamophobia. His administration put out a report today On the countries of the world who are committing the most inhumane acts. Israel's at the top of the list. Not North Korea, not communist China, not Venezuela, not Russia. Israel. And I can go on and on and on. He says we set up a program to deal with anti-Semitism. No, he didn't. The program is nothing. It's zero. It's an empty vessel. Ain't done a damn thing. Where's the FBI today? Where's Christopher Wray? No press conference. Where's the Attorney General? No press conference. Where's the deputy attorney general? No press conference. Where's the head of the civil rights division? That racist. No press conference. Where's the civil rights office, the Department of Education? Nothing. Nowhere. Anybody been deported? Anybody. Any single Hamas supporter in the country been deported because they support a terrorist organization? I'm not aware of any. I'm not aware that they're even looking. Any of these so-called students at these colleges who've overstayed their student visas, have they been deported? I'm not aware of one. We have a regime that unleashed the anti-Semitism here, that funds Iran, that funds Hamas, that funds the Houthis, that funds Hezbollah. We have a regime in Washington, D.C. that is funding the nuclear arms development program of Iran, that is selling oil to communist China. And where are all the conservatives? Where are they? Where are they? I'm just curious. They're so myopically focused on Ukraine. Well, how about focusing on our government? What the hell this idiot's doing to our country? Sick. Sick. Now, let me help out these policymakers. Number one, I've talked about it till I'm blue in the face. I've written about it in American Marxism. It's there. They can go chapter to chapter, verse by verse. What do we do about it? Number one, ready? Any college or university that receives a penny in federal monies, whether it's student loans, whether it's the Pell Grant, whether it's some other kind of student subsidy, whether it is funding for their cafeterias, for their facilities, whatever it is, one penny of federal dollar, that is a nexus that does not expel these students, should have their funds cut off. Period. Their funds cut off. Period. Number two, the Federal Bureau of Investigation should be tracking down these front groups for Hamas, Students for Justice in Palestine, and there's multiple, scores of them. Scores of, and shut them down. You do not have a right to promote terrorism in the United States. They're running around with the Proud Boys. They're running around this group. These people are spending millions. That's number two. Number three, Qatar. Qatar should not be free to spend billions of dollars in our universities and colleges to brainwash our students. That's number three. There's more. Number four, any faculty member who is spreading terrorism, any faculty member that is encouraging terrorism, should be removed from the colleges and universities that receive federal funding, which is almost all of them except Hillsdale. And Hillsdale's not an issue. Hillsdale's actually a patriotic college. They should be fired and tenure stripped from them. You do not have a right to spread terrorism by word of mouth in this country. Period. Period. I mean, I love it when they are, well, what about the First Amendment? There's Donald Trump. They have a gag order on him. He's running for president. He's got Michael Cohen with his own podcast. Every a-hole in America, every a-hole Democrat on TV, trashing Trump on and on, but Trump can't respond. Oh, wow. Notice they don't talk about his First Amendment rights. No, only First Amendment rights for the enemy. Number five. The Palestinian movement is the enemy of the United States. Whether it's the PLO, whether it's Hamas, whether it's Islamic Jihad, they are the enemy of the United States of America. That's not Islamophobic. That is a fact. That's their mission statement. That's their belief. They are the enemy. And any a-hole politician like Joe Biden, who tries to create some kind of a moral defense of an ideology of hate, of bloodlust, of murder, must be rejected at the ballot box in November, or this country is going to lose not just an election, it's going to lose its soul. The Palestinian movement is an anti-American Islamist movement. That's what it is. Ask Talib. She's Palestinian. Ask her. She's a Marxist and an Islamist. She's the fusion right there in one human being. There it is. And Joe Biden is a pig. That's right. If I'm going to be called names, he can be called names. He is a political pig, and he's always been a political pig. He is spreading anti-Semitism. He is spreading Jew hate. He's spreading anti-Americanism. The border's wide open to destroy citizenship in this country. He's trying to destroy the state of Israel while he's propping up Iran. There's a lot worse names than pig that I could call this man. He won't meet with Netanyahu, period. You know, he still hasn't met with him. Hates Netanyahu's trying to overthrow the Israeli government, trying to put our man in prison. No, 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 Mark, you can't call him a pig. I can call him a lot of things. Nowadays, where am I, Mr. Producer? Everyone thinks mortgage rates are extremely high, but it's not entirely true. Mortgage rates are much lower, way lower than the average credit card rate. I'll give you an example. Mortgage rates maybe in the 6s or 7s, 7%, 6.5%, I don't know. But I know what credit card rates are, 22%, 29%. Think about how much interest you're going to pay on that credit card if you're only paying the minimum payment every. Now, if you're a homeowner, a cash-out refinance with American Financing, which is the best, well, that can help you pay off that debt and lower your monthly expenses. And the mortgage interest is tax-deductible. So they're saving homeowners just like you, on average, almost $900 a month in interest and, again, tax deductions. Your interest on all other loans, such as credit cards, are not tax-deductible. So their salary-based mortgage consultants will show you how much you can save every month with no upfront fees and no obligation. You may even close in as fast as 10 days and possibly delay 2 mortgage payments, giving you greater savings upfront. Get the financial relief you need. Stop living paycheck to paycheck. Stop the incredible stress I know you're going through. I've been through it several decades ago. I know what it's like. Call American Financing today. Here's their number, and they're there right now. 888-900-1828. 888-900-1828. 888-900-1828. Or go to AmericanFinancing.net.
NMLS 182334. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org.
Yes. Joe Biden threw in with the racists and the segregationists, and not just supporting. He led the way against integration. Kamala Harris even admonished him during the debate, but now, of course, she thinks he's fantastic because he picked her to be vice president. And Joe Biden, the 1994 Crime Act, targeted black communities in this country. Everyone forgets, oh, that's okay. What's the big deal? And Joe Biden is an anti-Semite. He's now out of the closet. I don't care what liberals, whether they be Jews or Catholics or whatever, say. It's what he is. It's exactly what he is. He doesn't have the guts, the wherewithal, the moral clarity to call out what's going on. But what about the Palestinians, he says? Hundreds of billions of dollars poured into the Palestinians from all over the world. What about it? Where did all the money go? Where did all the money go? To tunnels. To armaments. And you know what's interesting, ladies and gentlemen? The Iranians are not Arab, let alone Palestinian. Yet they make alliance with the Palestinians. Why is that? Why is that? You can figure that out. We even have a story here, ladies and gentlemen, and I notice it's getting no attention whatsoever. And this is from the Jerusalem Post, citing other news sources. Hamas kills aid workers to manufacture Gaza food crisis. Now, you know who accused them of that, Mr. Producer? Fatah, the other Palestinian group under Abbas, under the PLO. Fatah is accusing Hamas of killing aid workers to manufacture a Gaza food crisis. Where's Blinken? Where's that SOB? Nowhere. Where's that shuffling buffoon? Biden, nowhere. The world is not aligned against the Palestinians. The world has contributed hundreds of billions of dollars to the Palestinians. And what do they have to show for it? Nothing. Except a terrorist machine. Why is that? Why don't the Egyptians want them? Why don't the Jordanians want them? Why don't the Syrians want them? Why don't the Iranians want them? Why don't the Saudis want them? Why doesn't another Arab country on the face of the earth or Muslim country on the face of the earth want the Palestinians? Why is that? No, they're Islamophobic. They must be, right? They're Islamophobic. I detest Joe Biden. I detest this man in so many ways. What he's done to our country, our economy, our border, our schools, our cars, our homes. I have nothing but contempt for this man. He's a liar. He's an instigator. He's a provocateur. And he's always been exactly that. And now he's unleashed this Jew hatred, this American hatred. And he shuffles around like he has nothing to do with it, like he's above it all. Funding the Iranians. They're going to have nuclear weapons. Everybody's going to be scratching their head. How come nobody told us? I mean, we were focused on Ukraine, for crying out loud.
Mark Levin.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the best of Mark Levin.
This is women's reproductive rights, Mr. Producer. It wasn't that long ago we couldn't define a woman. It wasn't that long ago that men could become pregnant. Now it's women's reproductive rights? These Democrats and Marxists are so screwed up they can't even get their own propaganda straight. Shouldn't it be persons' reproductive rights? That's number one. Number two, Joe Biden with a signature the other day destroyed women's sports, violated Title IX of the Civil Rights Act. But because he supports abortion, he's to be supported by women. Can I tell you all a little secret? This was taken out of the hands of the federal government, except for federal facilities and interstate commerce. Joe Biden has no say. So he's campaigning on an issue that he can't do anything about one way or the other. But it doesn't matter. Now, I want to say something here. If we had in this country going on our college campuses, black people being treated the way Jewish people are being treated today, that is, black people being treated like it's the 1950s and 60s, we wouldn't tolerate it. I wouldn't tolerate it. You wouldn't tolerate it. They wouldn't tolerate it. And neither political party today would tolerate it. Period. Period. The Democrat Party was behind slavery and segregation. The Democrat Party was behind Jim Crow. The Democrat Party was behind eugenics aimed at black people. The Democrat Party is an evil, diabolical, hateful, racist, segregationist, anti-Semitic party, and it's too bad so many people have been bamboozled. And by the way, this is the history of Joe Biden himself. In his 80s. But when he was 30 and sworn into the Senate, he threw in with the racists and the segregationists. He plays races against each other, religions against each other. He's a diabolical, evil individual. That's what he is. He tried to destroy Robert Bork, one of the great legal minds of our time. He tried to destroy Clarence Thomas. He destroyed circuit court nominees, blacks, whites, Hispanics, Jews, non-Jews, didn't matter. It's always about Joe Biden, an autocrat, an egomaniac, a cheater, a liar, a scammer. Why are we begging Joe Biden to say something about what's taking place in this country when he caused it? That's right. Joe Biden's statements, Joe Biden's policies, his attacks on the democracy in Israel, his attacks on the IDF in Israel, his moral equivalency, that of his media, that of his party, his tolerance for AOC and Omar and Tlaib, his embrace of Bernie Sanders, these are all anti-Semite, American-hating Marxists slash Islamists. That's what they are. The man is funding Iran. And there's a report today, if you look at my social sites, that they're backdooring negotiations with Iran right now on other sanctions that they can waive to try and get Iran, well, to be more receptive to their appeasement. Now, you're president of the United States, and there you sit. Not a word about what's taking place on the college campuses. Nothing. The idiot spokes idiot. The spokes idiot for the idiot. We're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to this. We're not going to. Words mean nothing when it comes to doing something about this. The FBI director is doing nothing. The head of DHS is doing nothing. The head of the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice, nothing. The head of the Civil Rights Office at the Department of Education, nothing. Zero. Oh, we have a program we set in place. That program has done nothing. What can they do? I've already said what can be done. And thankfully, some Republicans obviously listen to this program. Number one, threaten federal funding. If there's a dollar in federal funding, the left taught us this, whether it's student loans, the Pell Grant, food programs, anything, any subsidies coming from the federal taxpayer, there's a federal nexus. You can cut off all funding to universities and colleges that are promoting or even acquiescing to terrorism. When you say we're with Hamas, you're a terrorist. You're self-identifying as a terrorist. We are with Hamas. Hamas is officially a terrorist organization. Hamas. We are Hamas, they say. Okay, take them at their word. Arrest them. Number two, we have cockroaches dressed up as professors in our universities and colleges who have tenure, who've been hired by other cockroaches who are department heads and administrators at these various colleges and universities. And you and I are paying for all of it. Tenure does not trump the promotion of terrorism, the promotion of revolution against our country, the promotion of racism, segregation, anti-Semitism, which is what's happening in our college campuses today. We're not required to be observers. We're not required to sit back and watch. Things can be done. The FBI should be monitoring these organizations. Let me pick one. Students for Justice in Palestine is a Hamas network-funded front group founded about 8 to 10 years ago with tentacles in over 200 of our college campuses. I get so frustrated watching these news reports. It's spreading. Now it's in L.A. and it's in Texas. Spreading? It's organized. It's coordinated. It's funded by Hamas. Look it up. The Students for Justice in Palestine. Look who founded it. A Hamasian. That's right. Look at it. And who else is funding these protests? George Soros and the Tides Foundation. Democrat Party organizations, umbrella groups, raising money from billionaires, including those who are avowed Marxists who live in Shanghai, China. You don't believe me? Go look, go look. I keep posting things. I keep showing you. So this is a war on the United States from within. Our enemies within, our enemies without. The Islamists and the Marxists. The Bernie Sanders types, the Talib types, the Omar types, the AOC types. It's a fusion of Marxists and Islamists. And finally, the head of the ADL, who was an Obama apparatchik, figured it out. Now he's regurgitating what I said. Good! Everybody should say what I said, because I know exactly what I'm talking about. But it starts with the Jews. It always starts with the Jews. Then it spreads to the blacks, to the Christians. Next thing you know, you wake up. Wow. What the hell's happened to my country? I thought it was just the Jews. Now it's the Jews and the black. Wait a minute. Now it's the Christians, the Jews and the black. Wait a minute. Now the whole country's being devoured by these movements. That's right. These are Islamist, not Christian, not Jewish, not Hindu, not Baptist, these not Catholic. These are Islamist movements. Coordinated with, overlapping with Marxist movements. Now, they don't have everything in common, but they have enough. A centralized ideology, an absolute intolerance for individualism, an absolute intolerance for disagreements and differences, an absolute demand for compliance and uniformity. They're Hamas now. Say it. Not, oh, we have the anti-Israel protests. No! These are terrorists, terrorist wannabes. That's what they're saying. We are Hamas. And then, well, are they all Hamas? They don't all say they're Hamas. They're marching with people who say we are Hamas. They're using Hamas slogans. River to the sea. Gee, which river and which sea? They don't even know. Now, we, the American people, not required to sit back and observe. 2020 was enough. And now they're back. 2024. And you know who's gaslighting them? Joe Biden. Anthony Blinken. Thomas Friedman of the New York Slimes. Jake Tapper of the Constipated News Network. The whole lineup at CNN, the whole lineup at MSNBC, the entire employed staff at the New York Times, the Democrat Party. This is happening in blue cities and mostly blue states for a reason. These are their voters. We shouldn't have to ask Joe Biden to speak out. Week after week, month after month, we shouldn't have to pretend that he has when he hasn't. We shouldn't have to demand that our federal government do something about this as it is spreading across state lines. It's called interstate commerce. That we have foreigners from the state of Qatar, the regime in communist China, the Hamas terrorist network, Democrat Party billionaires. See, that's the problem. They need Soros. They need those guys. Those are money bags for Biden. And who's heard from the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Producer? Not a word. Nothing. Have they launched a federal criminal investigation to determine the funding sources? I mean, it's out there. I've talked about them relentlessly. No, they haven't. Department of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, always on the wrong side. Just policy differences, you know. Tell me, how many of these Hamas terrorists wannabe, have had their file opened? How many of them are here on a student visa? How many here have overstayed their student visas? How many here can be and should be deported? What is the Department of Homeland Security doing? Nothing. Zero. Nothing. Zero. Joe Biden wants to be Franklin Roosevelt. Wants to be bigger than Franklin Roosevelt. Spending the country into bankruptcy. Destroying our values and our belief system. Redistributing wealth. Attacking energy independence. Creating inflation.
Mark Levin. The Great One makes your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
Now, to convey to you some information, some of it's uncomfortable for some people, about the history of the Democrat Party and its tolerance. Ready for this? For Nazism. And now, that's called my printer. And its tolerance for modern Nazism in the form of Islamo-Nazism and, of course, Marxism. And so this gentleman, David Wyman, writing 40 years ago, and there have been subsequent books, this book, Abandonment of the Jews, America and the Holocaust, 1941 to 1945, when the Democrats controlled every aspect of our government. He says there are, in summary form, because the book is rather substantial, it's about 500 pages in length. These are the findings that I regard as most significant in my research. And in 40 years' time, by the way, nobody has come close to even challenging it. Said number one, the American State Department, and when I read this, I want you to think about the current administration, Biden, Blinken, the State Department, our media. Pelosi. Number one, the American State Department and the British Foreign Office had no intention of rescuing large numbers of European Jews, period. On the contrary, they continually feared that Germany or other Axis nations might release tens of thousands of Jews into Allied hands. Any such exodus would have placed intense pressure on Britain to open Palestine and on the United States to take in more Jewish refugees. A situation the two great powers did not want to face. Consequently, their policies aimed at obstructing rescue possibilities and dampening public pressures for government action. The point being, they put the pressure in the opposite direction to keep the Jews in Europe, in Germany, where they would face almost certain annihilation. Number two, authenticated information that the Nazis were systematically exterminating European Jewry was made public in the United States in November 1942. President Roosevelt did nothing about the mass murder for 14 months, then only moved because he was confronted with political pressures he could not avoid, and because his administration stood on the brink of a nasty scandal over its rescue policies. This is the same with Biden, but it's even worse. Biden is funding the terrorists who slaughtered those Jews in Israel on October 7th, and he's still funding them. And he's insisting that Israel not defeat them. That Israel not defeat them. So Biden has outdone Franklin Roosevelt. His hero. Number three, the War Refugee Board, which the president established to save Jews and other victims of the Nazis, received little power. It's like Biden saying, we set up a program to deal with anti-Semitism. Has no power and hadn't done anything. Received little power, almost no cooperation from Roosevelt or his administration, and grossly inadequate government funding. Contributions from Jewish organizations, which were necessarily limited, covered 90% of the board's costs. Number four, because of State Department administrative policies, only 21,000 refugees were allowed to enter the United States during 3.5 years that America was at war with Germany. 21,000 in 3.5 years. That amounted to 10% of the number who could have been legally admitted under the immigration quotas during that period. In other words, 250,000 were authorized under federal law. Franklin Roosevelt and his State Department only allowed 21,000. A lot in common with Biden and Blinken, don't you think? Number five, strong popular pressure for action would have brought a much fuller government commitment to rescue and would have produced it sooner. Several factors hampered the growth of public pressure. Among them were anti-Semitism and anti-immigration attitudes, both widespread in American society in that era, both entrenched in Congress, the mass media's failure to publicize Holocaust news, even though the wire services and other news sources made most of the information available to all of them. The near silence, just stick with me, this isn't an attack, on Christian churches and almost all of their leadership, the indifference of most of the nation's political and intellectual leaders, and the president's failure to speak out on the issue. That is a big difference today because actually mainstream Christian churches are speaking out. It's the radicals that are mostly Marxist and less religion, whether it's Christian or Jew or whatever it is, who are either silent or taking the wrong side. But you have people like Hege, Christians United for Israel, and so forth. That is a movement that exists that did not exist in the 30s and 40s. Number six, American Jewish leaders worked to publicize the European Jewish situation and press for government rescue steps, but their effectiveness was importantly diminished by their inability to mount a sustained or unified drive for government action, by diversion of energies into fighting among the several organizations, and by failure to assign top priority to the rescue issue. This, unfortunately, is typical of the Jewish culture, my culture, and my ancestors, whether it's the Second Temple or this, and it's happening today. You have billionaire Israeli Jews like Sabin out in California raising tens of millions of dollars for the Biden campaign. It's sick. You have Jewish members of Congress like this guy from Bergen County. I always forget it. Gersheimer? What is his name? Gottheimer Schmidt. Gottheimer. Oh, what's taking place is awful and awful, but I'm very, very impressed with the outspokenness of Joe Biden. Sick little bastard. Because the Democrat Party puts the party first. The Republicans do not. You know, how many Republicans have you heard say, including me, like I'm a Republican, but not a party guy. I'm a conservative or a constitutionalist or what have you. Not so on the other side. Party before country, party before faith, party before family. In 1944, number seven, the United States War Department, then the Pentagon, rejected several appeals to bomb the Auschwitz gas chambers and the railroads leading to Auschwitz, claiming such actions would divert essential air power from decisive operations elsewhere. Yet, in the very months that it was turning down the pleas, numerous massive American bombing raids were taking place within 50 miles of Auschwitz, actually within 5 miles. Twice during that time, large fleets of American heavy bombers struck industrial targets in the Auschwitz complex itself, not 5 miles from the gas chambers. But they wouldn't bomb the gas chambers. This is Franklin Roosevelt and the Democrats. Did I say Franklin Roosevelt and the Democrats? Well, have you been fed more BS from Doris Kearns Goodwin and the rest of them? It's just unbelievable. Number nine, Franklin Roosevelt's indifference to so momentous and a historical event as the systematic annihilation of European Jewry emerges as the worst failure of his presidency. See how they've lied about him as they've lied about the Democrat Party? The party of slavery and segregation and anti-Semitism and eugenics and you name it. Now the party of Islamism, Marxism. Sick. It's an evil party. It's a diabolical party. That's why I wrote the title, The Democrat Party Hates America. There was debate over the title of that book. I said, no, we got to call it as we see it. Which is why Barnes & Noble and other outlets covered it up. Didn't want you to buy it. But many of you did. Number 10, poor though it was, the American rescue record was better than Great Britain, Russia, or the other allied nations. That was the case because of the work of the War Refugee Board, the fact that American Jewish organizations were willing to provide most of its funds, and the overseas rescue operations of several Jewish organizations, not the Roosevelt administration. So he says this. Parts of this book are critical of the American Jewish leadership in the Holocaust era. The policies of Zionist leaders are particularly questioned, in part because their movement held the greatest potential for effective Jewish action. The criticism is made reluctantly, he says. Remember, he's a practicing Protestant. Yet, it must be included if the report is to be honest and objective. Several of those leaders have since criticized their own failures in the face of catastrophe. I've written not as an insider. I'm a Christian, a Protestant, of Yankee and Swedish descent. But I've advocated a Jewish state for a very long time, and I would undoubtedly have backed the Zionist movement during the World War II era had I been old enough to be involved in political affairs. It says, today I remain strongly pro-Zionist, and I am a resolute supporter of the State of Israel. My commitment to Zionism and to Israel has been confirmed and increased for years of study of the Holocaust. I look upon Israel as the most important line of defense against anti-Semitism in the world, which is exactly why the Democrat Party and their media keep trashing Israel, keep trashing their elected government, their commander-in-chief, keep demanding that they not defeat Iran, defeat Hamas, or the enemies that keep attacking them. And this has led to rabid, rampant anti-Semitism in our own country. Brought to you by Biden and Blinken and Pelosi and Schumer and Bernie Sanders, the Squad, Thomas Friedman, Jake Tapper, the whole disgusting rat's nest that also existed during the Holocaust and World War II. He says, I look upon Israel as the most important line of defense against anti-Semitism in the world. Had there been a Jewish state in the 1933 to 45 era, be much less painful today for all of us to confront the history of European Jewry during World War II. Says a final comment, then a question. The Holocaust was certainly a Jewish tragedy, but it was not only a Jewish tragedy, it was also a Christian tragedy, a tragedy for Western civilization, and a tragedy for all humankind. The killing was done by people to other people while still other people stood by. He says the perpetrators, where they were not actually Christian, arose from a Christian culture. The bystanders, most capable of helping, were Christians. The point should have been obvious, yet comparatively few American non-Jews recognized that the plight of the European Jews was their plight too. And in fairness, most Christians, like most Americans, weren't even aware of what was going on until 1942, thanks to the
York Times, which was owned by a secular Jewish family. Thanks to Franklin Roosevelt, the great Democrat. He can't blame Christians for what they didn't know. He says, would the reaction be different today? Would Americans be more sensitive, less self-centered, more willing to make sacrifices, less afraid of differences now than they were then? Would the reaction be different today? Well, look at Joe Biden's reaction. I come under a lot of attacks behind this microphone for telling you the truth, for drawing my own conclusions. Joe Biden has never supported Israel. He's gone through the motions because he wants the money from wealthy Jewish donors, and he wants votes in key states. Joe Biden is an anti-Semite, just as he was a racist and segregationist when it came to black people. He's not a compassionate man. He's a cold-hearted SOB. He doesn't even like his own country, as he systematically tries to destroy it from open borders, our economic system, destroying women's sports, and on and on and on. Here is a man, a relative lowlife, stupid man, who's accomplished so little in his life, who's become a multimillionaire and president of the United States. And he still attacks his own country as racist. Yet he's the racist. As Islamophobic, this country is far from Islamophobic. I've told you before, you want to see Islamophobia? Then look at the Muslim countries and the Arab countries. That's Islamophobia, where they slaughter each other. Not the case in the United States. Joe Biden is a evil, diabolical individual. Look what Donald Trump is up to. That's Joe Biden. Look how they keep targeting Netanyahu. That's Joe Biden. Look how they prevent Israel from actually defending itself, despite the fact that they say Israel has the right. That's Joe Biden. Look at the gaslighting in our colleges and universities. That's Biden and his party, as well as the Islamists and terrorists overseas, and the communists in China with their Confucius Institutes destroying our universities. Joe Biden is a very dangerous, evil man. He's not just an imbecile. He's not just a putz. He's dangerous.
Mark Levin.
We're giving you nothing but the best of Mark Levin.
So the immunity case went to the Supreme Court. Why is there an immunity case at all? Why? This issue hasn't been litigated as to criminal liability and immunity until today. Since the beginning of this republic, since we've had a president, no charge has ever been brought against an ex-president. Ever. Let alone a sitting president. Since this is the first time this issue has arisen. Why? Why is it the first time this case has arisen? You see, I watched the debates and the discussion among the justices. I found it very compelling. If I were in a political science class or a philosophy class, but not in a constitutional class, because there really wasn't anything said that had any constitutional strength behind it. Nothing. The Constitution says nothing about immunity. I thought it kind of precious when Kagan and Sotomayor mentioned there's no immunity in the Constitution, let alone for after an individual serves as president. Well, there's no abortion clause in the Constitution. I reminded them that, too. That they don't seem to care about that. In fact, judicial review is not in the Constitution. It's an implied power. Let me explain what I'm talking about. Up until Joe Biden became president, up until Merrick Garland became attorney general, up until Jack Smith became an unconstitutionally appointed special counsel, never had to present his resume to the Senate, never was voted on by the Senate, and yet he has these enormous prosecutorial powers. Up until these three stooges came on the public scene, the idea of indicting a former president really was preposterous. None of the Justice Department memos from the Office of Legal Counsel address this. Despite all the references to other cases involving civil immunity, none of the Supreme Court decisions directly address this. Excuse me. The reason why this case is a case of first impression after almost 250 years of raucous elections, of brutal elections, of crooked elections, is because the Biden administration has decided with its prosecutor to burn down all notions of comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, tradition, and honored processes. Now, what am I talking about? Ladies and gentlemen, we've talked here before, a couple of times before, about the election of 1876, Tilden and Hayes. And just to summarize, extraordinarily close election. Tilden actually won the popular vote. Three Republican states, very, very close. But the Republicans controlled the decision-making process in those states. And they threw out a lot of votes until they could say that they were going to throw their electoral votes to Hayes. That's what they did. Then we had a case, 1876, Oregon. All of a sudden, one of the electors was the Postmaster General. Problem is, the Constitution says no elector can hold any federal office. So he was thrown off. And then Oregon was thrown into chaos. So what happened in these states? You know what they did? The three Republican states? They sent in a separate set of electors. Now, today, the court calls them fake electors. Because the prosecutor calls them fake electors. Because the media call them fake electors. There's nothing fake about them. It was a close election. An election is not decided until Congress decides the election. The news media don't decide the election. States don't even decide the election. Obviously, they participate. But under the Electoral College, both houses of Congress meet. And they either sanctify the vote or they don't. Challenges are made. Challenges were made in 2000, 2004, 2016 against Republicans who, quote unquote, won. Those challenges failed. Those challenges were made by the likes of Marxist Jamie Raskin, Sheila Jackson Lee, Waters. They failed. The Electoral College vote is not over until Congress says it's over. Not some bureau or unit within a television channel. And so these battles go on. And so a second slate of electors from three different states were sent to Congress via the archivist. Were they trying to overthrow an election? Were they trying to obstruct the victor in the election? No, it's part of the process. It's always been part of the process. And yet this is one of the arguments that Jack Smith has made in federal court. This is one of the arguments that they make in their brief to the Supreme Court about fake electors and Donald Trump's role. And that's not part of his presidential duties. Oh, and the fact that Donald Trump's lawyer, John Eastman, tried to convince Mike Pence that he had the authority to take certain actions that he wouldn't take. That came up in 1876, too, by the way. Where the argument was that the vice president, then the president of the Senate, and the manager of the Electoral College vote, had the power to accept or not certain electoral votes. Then the vice president decided that he did have the power, but that he wouldn't exercise it because of the hostility that would come with it. John Eastman has been disbarred in California as a result of giving what is that opinion. But it's not a crime to give an opinion, and it's not a crime to give that opinion, and that's not an insurrection, and that's not obstruction or anything of the kind. It's an opinion. Because the Constitution is silent on the point. What I'm saying is that the Biden administration, the Department of Justice, Jack Smith, and the Democrats in Arizona, in Georgia, they've criminalized the election process. What used to be acceptable practice, alternative slates, a candidate calling a Speaker of the House in a particular legislature in a particular state, all these things were part of a rough and tumble electoral process. They're not crimes. You can throw around the word obstruction or insurrection or interference. But elections are challenged at every stage, from the voting stage to the counting stage, in court, the legal stage, whether fraud has or has not been committed, they're challenged at every step by Democrats and Republicans throughout American history, throughout American history. Some of the most, aggressive elections were held early in our history, between Jefferson and Hamilton, as an example. Between Adams and Hamilton and Adams and Jefferson. Brutal. There was constant give and take, constant promises. That's our history. But it's all been criminalized now. If I were to ask you, what is legal and what is illegal today in terms of election processes, you couldn't tell me. You couldn't tell me. Can a lawyer give legal advice? Apparently not. But what if that advice challenges what's taking place or urges the vice president to take a different action? No, they'll be disbarred. Why? Why? When you understand the electoral process ends with Congress and not anybody else, this is why people fight to the bitter end. And the Democrats have done it all the time. All the time. So let's swing back to the Supreme Court today. We have Justice Coney Barrett, who is very obsessed with what's private and what's official. She turns to the prosecutor's brief and says to counsel for President Trump, well, it says here this is private. Do you agree? Yes, that's private. Well, she's caught into the weeds of the Jack Smith the Jack Smith model, which is the criminalization of the electoral process. Why does it matter if it's official or private? He's the president of the United States. He's running for re-election. They do these things. Al Gore was vice president of the United States running for president. He didn't just roll over and accept the election results. He litigated in one county after another after another. His lawyers weren't brought up on ethics charges or criminal charges. He wasn't accused of obstructing the outcome in Florida, trying to change the outcome with litigation. Not by any prosecutor. It wasn't criminalized, the 2000 election. Gore's lawyers didn't face ethics complaints, didn't lose their law licenses. Despite the litigation going on and on and on, one county after another, as Gore tried to, quote unquote, overturn the results. Remember? It's not obstruction. And so the issue before the court really has been posed as what's official and what's not. And I posted that. That's what they're going to debate, and obviously that's what they debated. But that's not the real issue. Not a single justice, in my humble opinion, understood what the real issue is and was. They've criminalized the political and electoral process. That's why there's now a struggle over what's official and what's not. They have embraced Jack Smith and the Department of Justice's criminalization of our campaign system. It's not a crime to send a separate slate of electors. You're not imposing it on anybody. Congress has the final say. It's not a crime to pick up the phone and call politicians, whether they be legislators or congressmen and so forth, ask them what they can do, legally, of course. It's not a crime. Democrats do it all the time. It's not a crime, as alleged by Jack Smith, to claim that the election was thrown and to encourage people to challenge it and to speak out against it. We used to call that the First Amendment. And look at the charges that Jack Smith has brought. 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act. What does that have to do with anything? Nothing. The Enron Obstruction Act. What does that have to do with anything? Nothing. In fact, the court's considering that issue now as a result of Mr. Smith. And the federal contractors, the statute that's used to charge them when they're crooked. What does that have to do with January 6th? Nothing. So this case against Trump is the perfect illustration of why a president needs immunity even after office. But more than that, it's the perfect illustration of a prosecutor gone rogue, twisting the law and criminalizing elections. That's why the court is confounded, because they don't understand what the issue was.